from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulveda. And our theme this Wednesday, water. We begin in the Central Valley. At the federal level, farmers there will receive their full water allotment for the first time in more than a decade. This announcement on Tuesday came after years of drought when these farmers south of the Delta did not receive any of the water contracted to them. Now, at the state level, Governor Jerry Brown has lifted his emergency drought declaration for nearly all of California. The keywords being nearly all. Central Valley reporter Vanessa Rancagno explains why Tulare, Fresno, Kings, and Tuolumne counties are still in emergency mode.
These counties tend to rely on groundwater, which takes longer to recharge after a drought than surface water. But that's not really what keeping the emergency declaration in place is about.
It's about how many communities in those counties have been grappling with severe water shortages.
Max Gomberg is the climate and conservation manager for the State Water Resources Control Board. He says these four counties were hardest hit by the drought. And when wells went dry and people were left without water, the emergency declaration made possible state funding for relief efforts.
You know, we couldn't do it without the state.
Eric Coyne is a deputy county administrator for Tulare County. He says since the emergency was announced in 2014, Tulare County has gotten more than $170 million for ongoing relief projects.
That might be in household tanks where people with a dry well, we go and we set up and bring potable water to them. It could be that they've gotten a well deepened.
Or in the case of East Porterville, a major project to connect these homes to the city water system after 1,800 home wells went dry.
We can't complete these projects without having a continued declaration.
That's Gomberg again.
And we want to make sure that we see those projects through to reduce vulnerability to future droughts.
So the emergency declaration will stay in place until the projects are done, Gomberg says. He expects that will take another year or two. For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Rancagno in Fresno.
Okay. Before we move on from the drought, one more story. This one about how the water pinch hurts salmon spawns. As KQED's Craig Miller reports, fish managers announced yesterday that salmon season will be shortened.
Along much of the California coast, the commercial fishing season will be cut back to less than 2 months and won't start until August. In better years, boats would have 3 months of fishing behind them by then. Dave Vitt skippers the salmon troller Elmeru out of Eureka. He's also an advisor to the Pacific Marine Fishery Management Council. He says the drought is to blame for skimpy flows and warm river waters that make it tough for salmon to spawn.
That's been true throughout the state, but it's been especially true in the Klamath and Sacramento rivers. Most of the fish we catch come from the Central Valley, come from the Sacramento River.
Bitz, who's a veteran fisherman, says he worries about the young people he's seen coming into the multi-million dollar salmon fishery.
It's going to be very tough on them, and I really don't know how we help these kids survive until better times.
It'll also be tough on consumers. Estimates of retail salmon prices this summer range up to $40 a pound. For the California Report, I'm Craig Miller.
Let's move now to political news. Californians could get to vote earlier in the presidential primaries in 2020. Marisa Lagos from KQED's California Politics and Government Desk reports.
California has 19.5 million registered voters, but last year they didn't really get a voice in the presidential primary. That's because both the Republican and Democratic contest were pretty much locked up by the time Golden State residents cast their votes in June. Now, California's top election official and a state senator want to make sure the nation's most populous state has a bigger say. Los Angeles State Senator Ricardo Lara is pushing legislation that would move California's primary to the third Tuesday in March. The goal? To make California's presidential primary third after Iowa and New Hampshire. California Secretary of State Alex Padilla is backing the bill, which would let the governor move California's primary even earlier if other states changed their election dates. Laura says the change would also help increase voter turnout. For the California Report, I'm Marisa Lagos.
California public school leaders say extra funding has helped bolster the state's high school graduation rate. More students are now graduating than ever before, including some of the hardest-to-reach students. The California Report's education reporter, Anna Tentakulis, explains.
California's high school graduation rate now stands at 83%, up nearly 10% from last year. State Schools Chief Tom Torlakson delivered the good news in front of a crowd of cheering students at Woodland High School just north of Sacramento.
You can be proud. We're going to keep going up.
Torlakson says Woodland High is an example of what's happening across the state because more at-risk kids are also graduating. He says that's because for the past 4 years, districts have had the power to spend additional state funding on programs they believe work for their most vulnerable students.
We don't micromanage and tell districts how to spend the money, but they have these three general categories. They need to put a fair investment into those areas.
Those three areas are programs for low-income students, foster youth, and English learners. At Woodland High, the money has created new positions for people like Mr. Martin, a school counselor. Senior Cassidy Schreiner says he keeps kids on track.
Like, if you need help, you go to him and he'll, like, move his schedule around to help you. So he's just there for everybody.
But it's not a completely rosy picture for California. Persistent achievement gaps remain among certain groups of students. Federal education officials are also auditing the accuracy of the state's grad rates, but the state stands by its calculations. And critics point out more students are graduating because the state has suspended its high-stakes exit exam. For the California Report, I'm Anna Tentakulis.
Liberal, left-coast, progressive California is also the nation's leader in hate groups. Our state has 79 hate groups, as counted by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Their senior investigative reporter, Ryan Lentz, joins me now from Montgomery, Alabama, to talk about the rise in hate groups and what he thinks it means about this particular point in time. Good morning, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
So what designates a hate group?
Well, a hate group is an organization that attacks, vilifies, and demonizes a group of people at whole based on an immutable characteristic, something they cannot change. You know, ethnicity is one. Religious beliefs are another. Sexual orientation and gender. These are things that U.S. law acknowledges to be protected classes of people. And a hate group seeks to target those people as villains and demons because of that thing that protects them and that thing they cannot change.
Ryan, with these hate groups, you know, hate is the central tenet, and this seems kind of like an obvious question, but I'm curious what your position is. Why is hating somebody wrong?
Hate in itself is protected speech. You know, is protected under the First Amendment. Hate speech is protected speech so long as it doesn't incite violence or call for violence from those extremists' address. But the ultimate reality is this rhetoric of bigoted extremism and hate has a very strong allure for people who want nothing more than to do violence on those groups of people that are targeted by hate speech. And this type of hate and speech ultimately leads to violence, as we've tracked time and time again.
How do you see this chapter in California's history, American history, this rise of hate? How do you see this playing out?
Well, look, I mean, we've been through lots of periods of time in our country's history where this type of hate has been very normalized. We've seen it, you know, we've seen it infect political parties. We've seen it infect administrations and various political offices. We've seen, I mean, many times throughout our history, we've grappled with this question of who and what we are as a country. And I think that what we're seeing right now is the rise of a right-wing populist answer to that question, which is that we're a country of and for white people, and we're not alone as a country taking up that as an official position. The U.S. is but a small piece in a global puzzle of right-wing populism right now. And, I mean, I believe that we should hope and we should trust that the guardrails of democracy are strong enough to keep America from becoming something we no longer recognize. But I think to ever sit back and say, hate is now in the White House, extremism is now in the White House, conspiracy theories drive our national government, well, that's okay, it's normalized now. I think that's a mistake, and I think just because it no longer rises to the level of what's fitting within a 24-hour news cycle doesn't mean that it's not news.
Ryan Lentz is an investigative reporter for the Southern Poverty Law Center. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Support for the California Report comes from Robotham International, providing strategic tax, accounting, and business advisory services to global families, entrepreneurs, and venture-backed companies. Robotham.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, This family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, accepting nominations now for the 2018 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards at irvine.org.
Dale Raitz lives in Eastlake, a suburb in San Diego County. And on Monday evening, she sat outside on her porch and started to live stream from her computer when a bright, fiery ball streaked across the sky.
Went from... Did you guys see that? Did you guys see that?
Well, we didn't see it, Dale, because we weren't there and this is radio. But thousands of people in Southern California did see it. And you can see it, too. There's a link to the video on my Twitter feed. I'm at JohnLGC. And that's the California Report for Wednesday, April 12th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great day.